Actually, tonight I am going to talk about love, actually. And I want to just maybe make a quick disclaimer that I am certainly not claiming in any way to be an authority on the topic. But I think it's an interesting thing to reflect on through the lens of mindfulness or through the understanding of the Dharma, you know, through the understanding of what the Buddha teaches and how can we relate to this concept in a way that maybe is more freeing, in a way that's more connected. So I'm going to kind of speak about that from a bunch of different angles, and hopefully some of these will maybe land for you. I just got back from sitting 7 days in Joshua Tree with Noah and a bunch of other people. Christy was there. You're the only one. Everybody else is gone.
You're like,
yeah. And so, like, you know, that comes up a lot of, like, you know, you usually a lot of times when you're sitting on retreats, you can kind of get into some places in your heart that you maybe don't want to get into. And so that, for me, like, one of the things that comes up around this word is, what it points to for me, this word love, it really points to, like, the humility of humanity in terms of, like, it really gives me, aims me more in a direction of humility in terms of, like, you know, if I reflect on my life, like, you know, love is one of these things that's like total joy, total happiness. It inspires us. It's one of the most wonderful experiences we can have in life. And at the same time, it can also cause the most amount of pain and suffering and anguish. And so just the wide range of that word to me is actually pretty profound. It's like a very huge term, the word love. And it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, actually. It's a kind of not an easy word to define. I think everybody could have a different definition of it, and kind of like the word God or spirituality or kind of some of these words that we get into where there's not a real concrete definition, maybe. And there's really no word in this tradition, in the Theravadan tradition, most of our teachings come from a body of work called the Pali Canon, which is the teachings of the Buddha that were written in a language called Pali, which is a language that nobody speaks anymore. And also, there's actually no word in that language that means love. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of words that kind of point to that. So I want to talk about that a little bit. Because I think that love is something that's very much at the core of what the Buddha teaches. But it's interesting to notice that maybe there's not a word that you could say that in Pali this means love, so that makes it a little bit challenging to talk about or to think about. And so we talk about heart practices a lot here. We talk about developing mindfulness as an awareness and then developing qualities of heart that kind of support that. And I think at the base of all of the heart practices, I think love is definitely part of all of them. And I think it's more of the way the Buddha talks about it in a way that's kind of more like a wise love or love with understanding. And so the first one that we come into is this word metta, which is traditionally translated as loving kindness. So the word love shows up. And actually that's kind of not the best translation, because the word metta comes from the root word mitta, which means friend. The term we use around here called Kalyanamitta, which means like spiritual friend. So people in a Sangha community would consider each other Kalyanamitta. And metta comes from that word, which means really like spiritual friend or friendly companion. And so metta is really more of a quality that's more of a lighthearted quality, more of a kindness, friendliness. I included that in the instructions tonight. It's always good, always good. In meditation, to try to develop a quality that's more of a kind, friendly quality in meditation. And when you're able to do that, you'll find that you'll want to probably meditate more. And it's a nice quality that works well against like the part of our mind that judges or compares, or that critical, analytical part of our mind that kind of beats us up sometimes when we're trying to meditate. You might have come into counter with this part of your mind. And so kindness is totally great to work with that. The Buddha also talks about compassion, which I think is probably of all the words, for me, the word that means most like the love, the way that I think of it is compassion, which is just a deep caring. Not so much lighthearted like metta, but a deep actual caring. And compassion is always aimed at suffering. So compassion is a deep caring for the suffering in our lives, like a really quality of holding it. Maybe empathy is a good word. For our suffering and the suffering of others. It's kind of a really, to me, it's a pretty heavy, feels like a pretty heavy practice, compassion. Because it's always dealing with something that's really hard to sit with, or hard to face, or hard to deal with. And of course, to me, that there's a sense of love to that too, for sure. That there's a loving, caring. And the Buddha's teachings on this in the Metta Sutta, he talks about compassion being like a mother's love for her child. That's the way he talks about that. Kind of a deep caring. And then the other side of that is like appreciative joy, where we actually appreciate, which is maybe a little bit more lighthearted, like appreciating, having gratitude, sympathetic joy, like when other people are having success in their life, or other people that you're friends with, people you care about, are having some happiness in their life, we actually can appreciate that rather than being like jealous, you know, which is always not easy, actually. When you're having a bad day, one of your friends has something awesome happen, and you're just kind of like happy for them, but you're kind of like jealous a little bit, right? You know, so we want to watch out for that, because it's like we want to be able to participate in that. And so I think all of these qualities, and then there's equanimity, but I'll talk about that a little bit later, because that's how we balance these a little bit. I think all of these qualities have a component of what you could call love within them. But the problem seems to be, for me, one of the things, the thing about it to me that really points to the humility of it, is we use this word a lot of times. A lot of times in recovery communities, or just in general, we use this term unconditional love, which is a word we all probably know what that means. But I think on some level, it's actually, in most scenarios, in most relationships with people, unconditional love is not that easy to come by, actually. Have you noticed? That it's a nice thing to aspire towards, but usually there's some conditions involved in any. So the way my teacher Noah talks about it is like that there is love, unconditional love is totally possible. But unconditional relationship, no way. That relationships, you know, using kind of my hands of like, you know, like relationships, there's always going to be conditions, right? Like, you know, if I'm in any relationship, whether it's a romantic relationship, friend, family, that, like, you know, I can meet people, but, like, there's always going to be conditions, right? Like, there's certain things that I expect. Like, there are certain behaviors. There are certain things that, if those conditions aren't met, like, I'm not going to be in that relationship. You know, I'm sure everybody here has probably ended a relationship with somebody because the conditions were no longer appropriate. Or the conditions were causing you harm, or causing you suffering, or causing some level of just like, I'm not doing this anymore. Right? So there's conditions on relationships. You know, and the big thing is like, the reason why I think, you know, the suffering that comes from those types of relationships is because of grasping or clinging. We get attached. We get attached to people, right? And of course we get attached to people, you know? It's like totally, the idea that I'm not going to get attached to people as like something to aspire for, I think is actually not even healthy, you know? That we just, it's part of human nature, we're going to get attached. And sometimes people can get in this Buddhist sort of elitist attitude of like, you know, that you shouldn't attach and that's not skillful or that's whatever. But to me, it's just not realistic. And so to me, that's more like detachment. You know what I mean? Like detachment, as a word, I think that's really not super healthy to be detached. But it's also not super healthy to be totally attached either. And so the word that Noah uses that's kind of, I think, is just sort of non-attachment. But that's really, really not easy to do. unless you're going to put on brown robes and become a monk. If you're going to live in this world and have relationships with families and friends and romantic relationships, this is going to be a big part of your practice, I think, for many of us. Is how do we find a balance between those things? And if I like look back, whether it was my wife or relationships I've been in, or family members, people who have died. You know, we all lost. I'm sure everybody in here knows somebody that you cared about who died. Maybe some of you have had many people. I know I've had many people die that I've cared about. And I suffered a lot of that because, you know, I was attached to those people. You know? And, of course, you know, of course. And it's like to be realistic and to be honest about the suffering that comes with that. That's kind of a byproduct or sometimes a price that we pay as humans of having this loving quality. That sometimes we get roughed up along the way a little bit, and that's going to happen. And one of the things the flip side of that I find that's been helpful is because of the fact that you can feel that burn, you can feel that sting, and you can kind of open to suffering in a way that's maybe more wise or more skillful or more compassionate. Because the tendency, of course, for me, and for, I think for everybody, is when somebody dies or we lose a relationship or there's some suffering from attachment, we actually hate it. Like, I hate to feel that way. And that doesn't really work. And so how can I develop a quality that, like, oh, this really, really hurts really bad, but, like, how can I care about this instead of just wanting it to be gone? Or maybe having this tendency that I'll have this tendency sometimes to be arrogant about it and pretend like it doesn't hurt. I'm like, I'm totally fine. Doesn't hurt at all. I'm okay with that. You know, we can kind of do, that's the other side of it, where we just become in total denial. You know, just lie to ourselves. Like, oh, I'm fine. I don't care that she did that and left and whatever. You know, kind of, to me it just comes across as kind of being a little arrogant. That's not good. Doesn't really help. It doesn't really help. And so one of the things that's helpful, I guess, is when we start to get a little bit, so like Ajahn Chah, who's one of our teachers, one of our lineage Thai forest master, talks about there being two kinds of suffering. And this has been really helpful to me to look at things this way. That there's two kinds of suffering, and one kind of suffering is the kind of suffering that leads to more of it. So there's that kind of unwise relationship to it, there's that hatred of it, that we can sometimes get caught up in some cycle of suffering, and then we just go ahead and make it worse and worse and worse, and it just gets worse and worse and worse, and it's just more and more and more suffering. And then there's the other kind of suffering that he talks about, the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. And to me, that's more of like having that wise love that understands that. That actually has, like, the humility to say, like, actually, you know what, man, I totally got my ass kicked in this one. I'm really, really hurting right now. That kind of owns it, and then kind of takes steps to move in a direction to be free from that. And one of the things that's been helpful about using suffering that way, using suffering actually to end suffering, which maybe sounds like a weird concept, but that's really what we're trying to do in many ways, is that when we see how much we get hurt by being attached, what it does is it puts us in a position where we actually don't want to attach anymore. Where we're actually able to have what the Buddha calls in the fourth heart quality, equanimity. Which equanimity is really a balance of mind and heart. Where it's kind of, where we're not afraid to love again, or we're not afraid of this quality, but we also understand how powerful it is, and we understand how much we've been hurt by it, and we understand if I've been hurt by it, everybody's been hurt by it. And what it does is it kind of puts us in a position where we're maybe less likely to engage in behaviors or relationships that actually cause more suffering. And what it can do is it can inspire us, especially if we've been in a situation where we're like, maybe we've been hurt by somebody relationship-wise, and we're like, you know what, I'm not even going to do this shit anymore. Like, forget it. Done. We get jaded. They're like, forget it, it's not worth it. And then we kind of, because of fear, we kind of close ourselves off to opportunities. And you know, that's like not really what the Buddha's asking us to do either. But as we know, but as we become more aware of the ouch of that experience, the ouch of love, what it does is I think it puts us in a situation where we maybe approach it differently in the future, or we approach it differently in our lives now. Because what happens is we start to understand, like, you know, that it's not necessarily good or bad. I kind of hate to use those terms, but that it is just, it's just there. Like, we just have this capacity as humans. We just, like, love is just there, whether you like it or not. You know, for me, it's like, a lot of times I want to pretend that, like, it's not there, or, like, well, I don't like that word, or just kind of having this kind of, like, can we not talk about that anymore attitude sometimes? To just be like, it's actually there. It's installed. It's going to happen. You're going to get attached to somebody again. You know, and you're maybe going to get hurt again. And, you know, that's kind of how it goes. You know, that's kind of the way it is. And what it does is, it creates a little bit of a balance between, you know, using just this tool of mindfulness to kind of be aware around my relationships where love is maybe a part of it, like, you know, my family. You know, I got to deal with my family for the rest. I mean, I don't have to, but I choose to. I actually like my family. But there's, because of the fact that there's love there, we kind of sometimes get into difficult conversations. It gets into some sort of sticky situation sometimes. Even friends, sometimes we have to reevaluate, or we have to kind of be aware of you know, the stickiness of it, the stickiness of attachment. And to watch out for the two things, watching out for the tendency to just say, you know what, I'm just not going to play anymore because I'm sick of getting hurt. And the other stickiness of just being like, too much being right or too much holding on. And to me, a lot of times, it's like, you can't really just be non-attached all the time. But the thing about it to me is to know when you're like this, right? And then to know that you can go like this. Because for me, it's like, you know, it's kind of like this all the time. Like, that's kind of life. Like, I cling and I let go, and I cling and I let go, and I cling and I hold on and I'm attached, and then I get hurt. And I'm like, oh, I did it again. You know, sometimes it's the heat. And that's why we have things like compassion, and we have things like forgiveness practice, you know, because of the fact that a lot of times we maybe come out of a situation where we're like, man, I cannot believe I behaved like that, or I can't believe. You know, it's happened to me in the last couple of years with relationships of being like, you should know better, and then the self-judgment valve gets turned on high. And we beat ourselves up for getting involved in a situation maybe that we shouldn't have been in, or we should have, or, you know, maybe there were 7 red flags, and we're like, those aren't red flags, those are maybe yellow flags. Maybe yellow flags. You know, or like, you know, oh, I'll be able to, you know, just whatever you do in our kind of justifying, rationalizing behavior sometimes. And to me, it's important, like, to just, to put yourself in a position sometimes where, like, you know, like, to not be afraid of getting burned again, or not being afraid of, you know, because I have a tendency, because I had a lot of death and loss in my early childhood, and I have this really kind of dysfunction. I really kind of think I have pretty much a dysfunctional relationship with the word love in general. Which is funny, that's why I chose to talk about this tonight, to admit that. A lot of times it's very confusing to me. And so having a practice that's rooted in these other qualities has been really helpful for me, to kind of give me a baseline to check in with and be like, okay, like, am I being detached here? Am I just like, you know, am I too pushed off? Or am I too, you know, so what it does, mindfulness, metta, these practices, what they do is they give me a place where I can kind of check in, you know, and I have teachers and I have other people on the path that I can kind of check in with and say, you know, I got this situation going on, or I got this relationship going on, and I actually don't know what the fuck to do. You know, I don't even actually know. And it can be really helpful to just have the humility sometimes to, like, you know, when it comes to these types of things, this type of, I mean, how many, our whole culture thrives on, you know, the heartbreak song, the heartbreak movie, like, you know, it's just like such a common human experience. But when we're up against it, when we're faced with it, we can really get, we can really drown in it. You really can get really messy and really scared and angry, and it can get really out of hand. And, you know, it's been helpful for me to acknowledge that, like, you know what I mean? It's not something that I can really do on my own. I really don't think, you know, that that's why we all have people we can count on, different circles that you might travel in. To close, before I open it up, you know, I got a puppy today. And that's why when I say unconditional love, it's possible. Like, it's just like, I don't even know this dog, and it's just like, I just love this dog. It's like, how can you fucking not love a puppy? It's like impossible. You know what I mean? It's just like, and I had to put my dog, I had another dog that I had for 17 years that I had to put to sleep maybe 8 or 9 months ago. And it's just interesting to watch the kind of relationship change of, like, you know, like, at first it was like some denial about, like, yeah, like, you know, I'll be able to handle this because I'm a fucking Buddhist or whatever. I have this awesome Dharma practice and I won't suffer over my dog getting put down. It's like total bullshit. Right? And so, like, I had to kind of go through the whole process of that. And then I went through this period of time where, like, it was cool not having a dog, because if you have a dog, you know, they're kind of high maintenance and they can be a pain in the ass. So I went through this period of, like, oh, cool, like, I'm kind of over grieving the dog and I'm in a good place with it. And then, like, and I'm actually enjoying not having to be responsible for an animal. And then the last couple months I've been kind of, like, you know, checking out, like, pit bull rescues on the internet and looking at it. And my friends in California, actually, Joseph and Sarit got a puppy. And when I was in California them last week, and I was like, fuckers. Because I was with the puppy like all day, and I was like, I'm definitely going to get one now. And then the puppy would bite me, or he would pee, or there'd be some problem with the dog, and I'm like, yeah, maybe I don't want to get it. Every time the puppy did anything unpleasant, I was like, maybe I don't want to get one. And then just watch that, you know? It's just interesting to kind of watch how much your relationships to things change over time. And, you know, when my dog got out, people are like, you know, I'm like, oh, definitely not, I'll never get another dog again. You know, I have a puppy, I love it, you know, it's great. It's like, how many times have you gotten out of a relationship? You're like, well, I'm never doing that again. And then sometimes 2 weeks later, however it is, 2 months later, we're like right back into it again. You're like, well, you know. So it's like, just dealing with the impermanence and the ongoing change of these types of things can be interesting. So I think I'm going to stop there. Just to say again, I just kind of offer that for your own reflection, and to kind of, for you to see where you're at with this challenging, ongoing experience. So thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Brooke.